A call has been made for members of the Indian community to make more effort to learn Zulu to ease simmering tensions. This is one of the resolutions taken at a South African Muslim Network meeting in Durban last week. It was held to discuss racial statements that hardliner Pumlani Mfeke had been spreading on social media. According to reports, Mfeke had accused Indian business owners of assaulting, raping, exploiting and murdering their black employees, amongst other things. To tell us more, we are joined this morning on the line by SEMNET's chairperson, Dr. Faisal Suleiman. Dr. Suleiman, as always, jazakumullah for your time. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and welcome.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, Maulana, and jazakallah for the opportunity.
We did speak about the meeting that took place last week. We had one of our KZN reporters attend and even tweet from there. But in essence, just give us the summary of what led to the meeting and what transpired at the meeting.
As you know, or as you've mentioned, Mr. Mfeka has been making some of these outrageous statements about Indians. And he hasn't been saying some Indians exploit workers, or some Indians are racist, or some Indians, or some Indian has sexually exploited a worker. Or, you know, he has gone and said, virtually all Indians, and even when he's been questioned, he's drawn no difference between absolutely anybody, one individual or the community. So he's basically firstly painting the entire community with one brush, calling all of us racist, calling all of us exploitative. Saying basically he said in the past, Indians should be issue should go back to India. We have no place in South Africa. This is Mguni land, etc. And then of course now, in the past maybe month or so, these open statements, which can be interpreted as incitement to violence. He's spoken about our blood will flow like it did in 1985 and 1942, referring to the riots in which Indians were injured and killed. So that is the dangerous part. I don't think there can be okay. So then, in summary, then that is the sort of the statements, particularly those talking about violence, that was of concern to the community, and I was approached to organize a meeting to gauge the feelings of the community, which we did. So last week Tuesday, about 400 people attended the meeting across the Indian spectrum: Hindus, Christians, atheists, people from not only the religious groups but also social classes, NGOs, etc., across the Indian community. And including there was a white professor, a white journalist, and a few black African males and females. So a bit of a mixed group, not 100% Indian. Basically, as you would expect in a meeting of 400 people, a whole diverse range of opinions. Some of it, a little angry. There was an organization called, I think, SAMRAM, South African Minority Rights Movement, and they felt, taking the legal route in terms of wanting to charge Mr. Mfeka for hate speech, etc. There were others that brought up the issues of the fault lines where they exist in community, social cohesion. One of the suggestions is what was mentioned in the introduction, that Indians make an effort to learn Zulu, or Zulu or any Nguni language if you're in a Xhosa speaking place or whatever, that would help to bridge a gap. Because somebody else mentioned that, you barely see Indians at whether it's rallies or whether it's football matches, and that may be leading, to this impression as well, that we're an exclusive community. So all of these recommendations were made, and at the end it was decided that what was needed was a broader mandate and representativity from the Indian community, and that the organizations there would go back look at their constituencies and from there try and get a broader mandate to form a committee. Because I think, what was clear, that there are no short-term solutions to many of the issues. And that would, and in fact, what was also suggested was that perhaps the Legacy Foundation look at it. Now, the Legacy Foundation, for people who may not know, was established a few years ago to organize the commemoration of the 150th anniversary of Indians having arrived on the shores of KwaZulu-Natal. And it did that to some extent. To some extent, the Legacy Foundation failed because, you know, essentially the whole project got hijacked by politicians, whatever. But it was formed. It had a bit of a representativity across the Muslims, Christians, Hindus, Tamils, and there was that organization. Since those commemorations finished, it really hasn't done much. And people thought perhaps that would be an idea to look at the Legacy Foundation as a starting point. And I think a good suggestion was also made that this committee that gets formed not be restricted to Indians or even to members of that Legacy Foundation, that it be really a broad group that really has, because it's pointless one group meeting him and then there are issues of mandate, issues of who do you represent, etc.
Right.
But also to look at the broader issues. One of the important things that came out was this concept of moral suasion within the community. It came out very strongly that, look, there are Muslims, and obviously not everybody, but there are Muslims who are racist or who make racist comments, who treat their staff badly, who are, you know, not complying with South African law, etc. And then the question was, you know, how much do we police ourselves and how much do you police, how much, you know, must government do its job in terms of the Labor Department, etc. And while it was felt, and this is an important thing, while it was felt that, yes, of course, you can use the argument that it's government's job or the Labor Department's job to police people, it was also, you know, what also came out was that somebody and people, you know, in your area will remember the 1985 riots in the Everton area, for example, where Indians were burnt, etc. Well, the businesses were looted, burnt, etc. Is that when a mob has been primed, or a group of frustrated, angry people have been primed, all it takes is you know, one incident just to light up that. And a person in that situation doesn't wait for court admissible evidence or for sophisticated arguments. We've seen Rwanda, we've seen Bosnia, we've seen xenophobic attacks twice in our country on a large scale, where people didn't wait for rational arguments or for, you know, sophisticated intellectual discussion. People were primed, something, anger triggered them off, and they went on a killing spree.
Mm.
And that is what we must be very careful about, you know, and therefore, you know, the call to moral suasion within each community, using the platforms like the radios, like our ulama on radio and on TV, etc., to say where there are fault lines, we have to address them. We have to say to our people, you may be able to bribe a labor inspector, you may be able to circumvent South African law, but you cannot circumvent Allah's law. You cannot circumvent what is right and wrong.
Right.
And that is important.
Now, when it comes to Mr. Mfeka, the Mazibuye Forum, how are they linked? And also, do you believe there's a particular agenda at play? There's a lot of talk amongst, especially those in KZN, about a third force, about those who may be putting up these people and these formations to try and stoke this anti-Indian sentiment.
Mr. Mfeka was originally part of the Mazibuye African Forum with a gentleman called Sally Sangweni, who formed it about 2 or 3 years ago and who started making similar, you know, claims against Indian businessmen. At that time, there wasn't this open intimation towards violence. They then met with the Indian community. They met with different sectors. I think the Muslims met them on their own. The Hindu community met them on, you know, showed them all the work that is being done. And, you know, and they wanted assistance with maths and with computers and literacy and all that. And I think some of that was given to them. Subsequently, Pumlani Mfeka then left Mazibuye African Forum and formed his own organization, two or three of them, and has now, you know, gone on this latest attack. And he was, I suppose he went on it before the Gandhi book was released, and then he used the findings or the statements made in the Gandhi book as further proof that basically, according to him, Gandhi was racist, and we are all descendants of Gandhi, and we all think like Gandhi, and so we all racist as well. As to your question about a third force, what is interesting is that a lot of the attacks, even on SAFM about 2 weeks ago, there was discussion on the books, and essentially it turned out to be an anti-Muslim fest. There were just about four or five callers that just attacked Muslim businessmen, or the Muslim community, not even the businessmen, the entire Muslim community. And yes, we've heard it mentioned privately to us that could there be a third force behind Muslim Fekka or pushing him towards singling out the Muslim community in particular. Look, without proof or research, one can't make a statement like that. All we can do is, and this is what, you know, we have to do in this committee, is essentially do the research, get the numbers in terms of how Muslims, you know, or Indians, kind of, or what proportion of the economy, you know, do Indians, represent, what proportion of, for example, here in KwaZulu-Natal, I'm sure you've heard Muslim Fekka say, oh, Indians own all the land. Mm. I mean, that's ridiculous. I think a company like Tonga Chulet probably owns more land than all the Indians put together. So that sort of research, you know, quantification of the total number of tenders or value of tenders and what, how much of it has gone to Indians, how much of the economy is controlled, how many CEOs, for example, in government are Indian, or things like that. That sort of hard evidence and facts and figures are probably needed to go to this, to address this these allegations properly. In addition to the fact that the Indian community, Muslims and other Indian organizations are doing a large amount of relief work and social welfare work, etc. And this, I think, needs to be highlighted. But from our perspective, as a Muslim community, I think, you know, we have to be, certainly we're trying to do some research at SAMNET, into some of Muslim Fekka's background. But I mean, it's, you know, if there is a third force, it's not going to be anywhere in writing or anywhere where you can find it. These things are not, you know, put down where you can find it or put down on paper.
Not easy to
prove. That would be hard to, that would be hard to prove. And therefore we must be vigilant, and we must look, for one thing, we can't escape the fault lines within ourselves. Whether Muslim Fekka raised it or not, or whether, you know, it this issue dies down or not, if that is a cause of anger, and it is, if I have a minute, I will give you an example.
Mm.
At the meeting, there was a gentleman who approached me when everybody had left, to say that he's a talk show host on a Zulu radio station in town, and he does the labor program. And I must say, I found him to be pretty sincere. I didn't get the impression that he was speaking with any recrimination or racism. And he just said to me, look, you know, all your plans, and he was there for the whole meeting. It's all good. The problem you have at the moment is on every one of my shows, when we open the line, people are only calling in to complain about businesses, and mainly the Sulaiman businesses, and by that Muslim businesses, and because we stand out in the way we dress, in the way we look, etc., it's easy to identify us. And so I said, no, you know, I spent actually about 45 minutes with him after that, just talking in detail. For example, now he was quite scared himself, because I actually offered to say to him, you know, I'm happy for you to come meet our ulama. I'm happy for you to meet our businessmen. But he was actually afraid. But he said to me, look, you have to address this somehow, that people are complaining about, you know, the way they've been treated. Now, I look at the first of all, we've got to say that the nature of employee-employee relationships is a tense one at best. Right? It's the nature of employers to feel all employees are either lazy or not doing their jobs, and the nature of employers to feel that they're being overworked, underpaid, etc. That is just the nature of the relationship. But at the same time, there are laws, and there's morality, and there's ethics. And where our community, where we are transgressing that or not complying with the law, then we have to look at that and not say, oh yeah, this guy is just got a racist agenda. You know, we the one mustn't distract from the other.
Yeah.
We cannot ignore the fact that, and I mean, like I say, I didn't find him to be speaking out of recrimination. You know, he wasn't there for fame, because he in fact refused. I mean, I even said to him, would you mind going out onto a radio talk show? And talking about this, you know, even anonymously, he said, no, that's not my point here. My point is to tell you that, you know, I get week in and week out, people, and when others hear it, it fuels the anti Indian sentiment or the anti-Muslim sentiment, because some are hearing it and they're saying, oh yes, now you see, so they're all like this.
Yeah.
And as we know, that is the nature of racism and stereotyping. And so while we address everything else, I think we have to look at that where we are at fault. We have to be talking about Indeed. That in a big way.
Dr. Sliman, jazakallah for your time this morning. Much appreciated.
Jazakallah for the opportunity once again.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was the chairperson of SEMNAT, Dr. Faisal Sliman. And I think the key point is there that when it comes to the fault lines, when it comes to the own weaknesses within the Indian Muslim community, we need to accept that within the Indian community in general, where there is elements of racism, abuse of workers, extravagant lifestyles that give fuel to those who have agendas and want to escalate anti-Indian sentiment. We need to look at that, and even if it doesn't give them fuel and even if no one is saying anything about it, it's the right thing to do from our religious perspective, from our moral perspective.